The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual co-hosts and do not reflect the official policy or position of the Firearms Radio Network and or their employers. Viewer discretion is advised. This is especially true on live shows.
Really, I just wanted to see if you guys were still alive. We heard these blood-curdling screams.
I think I'd rather build guns instead.
And he's like, no. Dealerships replace parts. Mechanics fix cars.
But you want me to tell you that, or you want me to sell you on the course?
That's a good way to, hey, avoid that one you just asked me about.
Yeah.
This is the After Action Project, and we're bringing you the student's perspective on firearms training. This is the podcast that takes you inside the eyes of the student and the mind of the instructor, from practical to tactical, medical to legal, and everything in between. If there's a course for it, this is your fly on the wall after action destination. This is the After Action Project.
If you like what we're doing and would like to help support the show, visit patreon.com/afteractionproject. If you'd like to throw us some free support and appreciation, we would like a 5-star review on iTunes or anywhere else, MySpace, Facebook, any of that stuff would be awesome. Tonight's episode, just like every episode, is brought to you by the Firearms Radio Network. Be sure to check out the other great podcasts on the Firearms Radio Network by visiting firearmsradio.tv. Tonight, we are joined by AJ Zito of Practical Performance and his student, Jake. Together, we will be discussing the Yavapai College Gunsmithing course. So before we get into that, Andy, why don't you do what you did last week? Tell us a little bit about what's been going on in your life, any travels that you have going on, and all that good stuff, man.
Pretty much just normal work as usual. With the addition of yesterday, you and I obviously drove out into the middle of nowhere, laid full of snow, freezing our aspirins off. But other than that, it was a pretty good course. We had 11 students on the range for a place that was literally in the middle of nowhere that kind of surprised me. Other than that, I mean, just regular, normal, everyday work and listen to audiobooks, podcasts, stuff like that. Just kind of boring, really. How about you?
Same. And if you're in the New Mexico government, we had 11 students total, but there was no more than 2 on the range at a time. Got my first sunburn of the training season, which is awesome. Wasn't really expecting that, but probably see some suntan line goes on there. So I guess I need to break out the sunscreen for next weekend. AJ, tell us a little bit about yourself, what got you into gunsmithing, and a little bit about Practical Performance.
Sure. So myself, I am a full-time gunsmith. I also am a firearms instructor as well across the country. My one day a week job is I teach at Yavapai College in their gunsmithing program, where I teach the first year students about basic pistol workings and functionality and nomenclature. And then with the second year students, I teach custom pistol smithing, things like trigger jobs and, how to time revolvers. And then we build up to eventually teaching them how to build their own custom 1911s and a bunch of other stuff with modern plastic pistols and stuff like that. So, my company, Practical Performance, been around since about 2015. That's what I teach under on the actual shooting side, and I build the guns under Practical Performance as well. We specialize in custom 1911s and 2011s for both carry and competition use, and that's pretty much my everyday thing.
Awesome. Do you guys like take in just malfunctioning revolvers that are having some timing issues? Maybe the manufacturer makes guns named after dogs, bulldogs, maybe. Any of that stuff?
we do on occasion. Over the last year, I've really been trying to move out of that. That's really where I started up. I was actually worried the first year I was a gunsmith. I was afraid I was going to end up being a revolver guy, because it seemed like all I did was fix revolvers with timing issues and do barrel setbacks. So I tend to try not to do those things as much, but case to case basis, sometimes I will bring them in. Yeah.
Yeah, if you need a gun for your students to work on that they couldn't mess up more than it already is, reach out to us. Love to take a look at that thing. Oh, man. Jake, talk to us a little bit about yourself, your background and experience with firearms, and what led you to taking a gunsmithing course.
So I grew up in near the heart of Orange County, California, all my life. Always been around guns. My dad's ex-military, likes guns. Never really started shooting until I was about 17 or 18. And at the time, it was like, you know, this is really cool. This is really fun. And that's around the time I ended up going to school in Long Beach for engineering. And out of the 5 years of schooling there, I was all in it until about year four, when I just kind of decided, I don't want to do this. I think I'd rather build guns instead, because I just kind of built guns, you know, the normal California stuff, AR here, something there. But then I found 80% 1911s of all things, and I took one and started fiddling with it. And I was like, cool, this is really fun. Unknown to me, I built, you know, a really garbage gun. But that's around the moment I decided, you know what, let's go to Arizona instead and let's go through this program and we'll see if we can do it right.
Awesome. I'm guessing Kimber took the design of that 80% 1911 that you've
made. Oh, they wish they had the design of that.
That's a little bit joke. It's a joke, kind of. Awesome. I'm not a 1911 guy, but I'd love to be. A good friend and shooting instructor, buddy of ours, Tim Heron, can really run the hell out of a 1911.
I bet he could.
So Jake, talk to us a little bit about what students should expect to get out of this class. What, if I was looking at enrolling and taking this course, what are some things that I would have to own or purchase to take this class?
So when you go into it, they give you the basic list of things you'll need. And it's not a bad list. It's your bare minimum list. It'll get you through exactly what you need for the first couple months until you start to discover what you need. Like, they'll tell you need sandpaper. So then from there, after you start using it, you realize maybe I need more than just this one kind of sandpaper, or maybe I need a more diverse file collection. Maybe I need other tools more suited to help me, things like that. Ultimately, what you put into the program is what you're going to get out of it too. You need to go in and just be ready to do things, be ready to learn, be ready to do what you can.
Nice. AJ, who's a student for, or I guess expand on that a little bit. Is there anything else that I should have or that I'll need to purchase to take this course? Do I need to be a student at Yavapai College or?
Yeah. So you have to be enrolled in Yavapai College. And this is, you know, this is a full-time gig. You are, as a student there, you're there Monday through Thursday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. if you're in the morning class, and then, you know, 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. if you're in the evening class. But you're there all day working on stuff. And then with the option of being there on Fridays as well for an additional lab. So it's a full-time commitment for sure. You know, the things, you are going to have to buy some guns, obviously. You're going to need guns to take apart and put back together and, you know, learn on and be able to kind of diagnose and figure stuff out on. That's always a big expense for the students. And then as you progress, you're going to need some specialty tooling. You know, like Jake said, he knows my rants about files with the second year students all the time about buying good files. you know, number two Swiss cut file is like the greatest file ever known to man. And everyone tries to get away with, you know, Harbor Freight, bastard cut, terrible, terrible files. And, they just don't work in gunsmithing. So you are going to have to buy some specialty tools and some good tools. You're not really going to be able to get away with everything from Harbor Freight and expect to do quality work with it. But those are really the expenses. You're going to go through a lot of sandpaper in your time there, that's for sure.
What's the dollar amount that you'd say that is an average number that somebody needs to start with?
Ooh, okay. So that's a rough one, because it really depends if you purchase all the guns you need, right? Or you borrow guns from people to work on. There's a huge difference in expense there, especially if you buy the guns used or new. So Jake, how much did you spend on tooling and guns your first year?
Oh, geez. The first year was actually relatively mellow compared to the second year, where you kind of find out what you want to do. But the first year, I bought most of the guns on the list used. If we're not including tuition, I was probably running anywhere from probably about $1,000 a month if I was breaking it down into months. Some months got more expensive because things would fall in your lap, and sometimes you were actually getting through the month pretty well from stuff from the previous one. It was only a couple hundred, but that's only from the school side of things, and you got the living side and all that comes with it. If I had to put a safe bet in that, see, I like to buy a lot of tools when I think it makes my life easier. So I was probably up more toward 1.5 to 2 every month, but it ranges drastically on how you approach it.
Yeah. As a tool guy myself, I love tools and anything that can make my job easier. And like you said, quality over quantity is huge, even just in my technical world. So I can just imagine, I mean, being a gunsmith, I would assume, AJ, you're never going to stop buying tools. You're never going to stop getting better tools and new things that come out. Just, I mean, with guns in general, that's our whole lifestyle. But as a gunsmith himself, there's always going to be this new, latest and greatest, better tool out there that you can buy. Would I say that's correct? Would you say that's correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's always someone trying to innovate, and especially, you know, within the 1911, 2011 world, someone's trying to make their job easier and faster, because it does take a lot of time to do this stuff. And, you know, as we all know, time is money, and the longer it takes you to do something, the more time you were spending, you know, the more you're wasting. But things take time. So if I can do the same quality of job in less time, that's what I'm looking for. So, you know, Jake can tell you too about, you know, all the different jigs we buy or build, or, you know, just trying to achieve one, you know, just a little bit better or a little bit faster. So it's a constant thing for sure.
Yeah.
That's the fun part. Before you buy one, and then it turns out, you know, the other one's better, and yeah, then you have two, and it's great.
Yeah, I agree. So before we get further into more of the guns, I want to know a little bit more about the college aspect of it. This is in Yavapai, which is Prescott, Arizona. Prescott, I better say it right before these guys slap me. That's right. Like, it's serious. It's like Prescott.
Biscuit.
That's right. And I like biscuits. But do you get – so a couple questions, AJ. Do you get a lot of students that come from out of state? And then also, is this course – you said most of the time you're there Monday through Thursday. Are they also having to do basics, English, and all that other stuff as a college, or is it specifically just gunsmithing?
Okay, great questions. So I would say even now a majority of our students are out of state when they start. There's very few that are residing in the Prescott area, or even Arizona for that matter, before they enter the program. I mean, myself, before I was in the program, I was living in Chicago or outside Chicago. You know, Jake was in California. There's very few that are actual locals in the program. So we do get a lot of guys traveling in and out. As far as what you need to take, so it's an interesting program. It's a certificate program, right? Because it is a trade, and we are a trade school. So if you are going to, let's say, get an associate's degree, you will still have to do all your core courses on top of the gunsmithing courses. So you have to do your English, your math, you know, all the other stuff you need in order to complete your credits for an associate's degree. But you don't have to do that. You can go to the program and just get the certificate, and that's totally good. Not a problem at all. And I think, you know, we find a lot of guys end up getting the associates because you know, with the amount of credits you're getting from the gunsmithing program, and then, you know, over 2 years, it's not too terrible of a workload to get the other credits in order to get an associate's, and you end up with an associate's in applied sciences in gunsmithing.
Nice. So it's about two year program, 2 years to get the certificate.
Yeah. So the way it works is you've really got two programs going on. You've got the 2 year program, which is going to, at the end of the 2 year program, you get a certificate, right? Which is, you are a gunsmith. You're a certified gunsmith now. And then you have our third year program is what we refer to it. Or it's a master program. That's what Jake is in currently. And that's where you have to, basically you have to be accepted into that program, and only the top guys get accepted in. And it really, you start specializing in that next year, that third year. And then you get basically a master certificate after that third year, if you complete that as well. So there's really two programs. The first is 2 years, and then you have the optional third year if you get accepted into the third year.
Awesome. So let's say I go through the program, I do the 2 year certification, I get the certificate. What's the job outlook look like? What am I doing with the next 5 years of my life? And how do I guess, what does the industry look like from that perspective? Is there a high demand for gunsmiths right now?
Unfortunately, it is a dying trade. I won't lie to you guys and say that gunsmithing's coming back. I do hope, and we are seeing a resurgence in people utilizing gunsmiths, which is great. One of the things too is I am a specialized gunsmith, right? I'm a pistol smith. That's really, I only kind of work on a couple of different things. We're seeing a real big spike in general gunsmiths and their workload, because people are starting to fix, the stuff when it breaks, instead of throwing their plastic fantastic away and getting a new one. There are no guns to be had, so you might as well fix it. And, why you would never fix it in the first place, I don't know, but that's the world we live in. So we are seeing a increase in activity for general gunsmiths. When you get out of the program, man, there's so many different routes, that you can go to. I've had friends and classmates and students go in all sorts of directions. I've had some guys open up their own shops and do general gunsmithing. Very few specialists, but one or two specialists out there. I've had guys go to big companies like STI or Ruger or Robar or other companies that build guns. And I've had other guys just not do anything and decide that this wasn't for them. That's not their jam, and that's cool too. We've had guys go on to do great Cerakote companies and start their own Cerakote companies, Cerakote application companies in the custom world. So there's so much out there. I've got, some people building custom high powers. There's tons of stuff out there, especially if you do like a CNC operators course that we offer at the college as well. There's basically no job out there you can't do, or at least apply to do. And that's always the big thing. I always tell guys, when you get out of the second year program, you are either ready to go work for somebody in like a general gunsmithing shop, or you are ready to start apprenticing under some type of a real gunsmith or a master gunsmith or a specialist at that point. But there's tons of avenues.
Yeah. Cause it's, we were talking to a gunsmith buddy here in Albuquerque the other day, Andy and I, and that was one of the things is it's, you can't find a good gunsmith in this town other than him. And there might be one or two other guys, there are a couple other guys that can do some work on some guns, but if you need something specialized where, you know, he's able to work on late model guns, stuff that you might have inherited, and somebody really that you would trust with your gun. There aren't too many here in Albuquerque. And that's the question I had for him, man, is are there people still going out there and learning this trade, or will there be a gap in the industry at some point where the folks at the master gunsmiths, where they're no longer doing it, and then there's really nobody coming up to replace them? That's just the backlog that he has alone is just, you know, what is he out, 6 months or something like that? It's,
yeah, he's 90 days, I think, at least.
Yeah.
That's, I know this is going to sound funny, but that is not a huge wait list right now. Wow.
Amazon can get it to my door in 2 days.
And that's the world we live in. Right?
Yes. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. You know, something interesting that's been happening, and I've noticed it since I've been at the school. You know, when I went through the school to be a gunsmith, I was already in my 30s, 32, something like that. And I was one of the youngest guys in the program. Now, the majority of the student body is in their 20s, and some even younger. So it's an interesting shift in age as to who's going through the program now. Are there going to be guys? Yeah. Here's the problem with everything, right? Not all gunsmiths are built the same. That's just the way it is. Some guys do just enough to get by, and some guys do the work and they want to excel, you know? So there's a lot of guys going to lots of other programs and calling themselves gunsmiths, and they probably shouldn't be. And that's just the way it is. You know, there's nothing stopping anyone from hanging out their shingle and saying, I'm a gunsmith. Okay. Can you machine me a front sight? No, but I can order it from Brownells. Yeah. Anyone can order it from Brownells. Yeah.
Yeah. They take your money and then they're on YouTube figuring out how to do the job they just charged you for.
Yep.
Jake, talk to us a little bit about your aspirations, your goals, what you want to do with, sounds like you're going through the master program now. What does that look like for you?
So basically since the second year started, as AJ said, that's when we start going into custom pistol stuff. I came in wanting to learn everything I could, but I already had this inkling that I was going to go into pistol work. And as soon as we started building 1911s, that is basically what I put my nose to the grindstone on that ever since then. So now that I'm going through the master program, every day in, day out, some other pistols, but it's mostly 1911 or 2011 style gun work for me, just trying to build. Last semester was the competition semester, so I was building the gun for the open gun that I shoot that we were talking about. Basically, the goal was make it as good as I can and make it as fast as I can. This semester is our guild semester, so take what we learned over the last couple months, or, well, no, not months, a year and a half, and try to fine-tune it and perfect it as much as we can. And we're still in school, so we can't really expect it to be perfect, but you can try and keep trying. So I'm just trying to get the 1911 and 2011 side of things down as perfectly as I can until I feel like I'm ready to, well, share it with the world and open up my own custom shop and try to put some of my ideas out there.
So what's your future plan after you get done with class? Are you staying in Prescott? Are you going to go back to California? What's your future?
No, not California. definitely not California. No. But so I really love the Prescott area. Once May-ish, give or take a month, probably give an extra month, I'll be in the market trying to find a place to establish, you know, permanence. It'll probably put me more in the Chino Valley area. But once I get that, once I establish, you know, a house, a place to live, I can go forward with the FFL application. I get my hands on some machinery, and then from there I can just start, well, putting my ideas into my hands instead of having it be on a piece of paper, and try to work my way up from there.
So we as instructors, Jeremy and Judson and myself, we kind of have this belief that all good competition is good for the business, right? Although we may have, 100 plus instructors here in Albuquerque specifically, there's probably, we can count on our fingers on our left hand ones we'd recommend. Yeah. The guys are holding up 3, 4, 2. That's about as far as we can go as far as, recommending somebody else, because sometimes maybe what we have to offer isn't what they're looking for. So how do you guys feel about the same thing as far as gunsmithing? I mean, you're going to have AJ just right around the corner, one of the best gunsmiths that's around in the area. And then here comes the new kid that's going to have to develop his old style. Do you guys think that's the same way as far as competition and gunsmithing, or do you think it's a direct competition?
You want to take that one first?
Sure. Yeah. So, I absolutely have no problem with competition. And if I did, I wouldn't be teaching future gunsmiths, honestly. We've had problems with other instructors in the past where they keep this Gracie gift to themselves, where they'll teach you all but maybe the one thing you need to make something work. I don't believe in that at all. Listen, we've all got different styles. My style of building a gun is not the same as Jake's style of building gun. Yes, our guns are built very accurately, similarly, but his aesthetics are very different than my aesthetics. He prefers one type of trigger over maybe the trigger I put in a gun. And that's why there's plenty of room in this industry for, everyone, as far as I'm concerned, especially, custom pistol smithing. I will send guys, if they don't like my style of something, hey, if I can't do it, or if I just don't want to do it, honestly, hey, you should check out this guy. He does a lot of that. You should look into that. Browning high powers are a big thing. Everyone assumes because I work on 1911s and 2011s that I have some sort of love for working on Browning high powers. I don't. I don't even want to touch Browning high powers. They're just not my thing. Great gun, don't get me wrong, but it's not something that I want to spend my time customizing. So I send people over to like Grittis Precision, and send them down there. Shotguns, not my thing. Right. I don't really have an interest in working on. I'll immediately say, hey, call my buddies over at VanComp. Go send your shotgun over there. This is what they do. There's plenty of room for all of us. And let's be realistic. I'm a one man shop. Even if I was able to bust out a gun a week, which is pretty fast on the custom 1911 kind of build spectrum, I could only build 52 guns a year, 50 guns or 49 guns if I want to avoid excise tax. So that's not a whole lot of guns. There's very few gunsmiths building that many guns. There's plenty of room out there, and there are plenty of guys building great guns out there. Yeah, they'll be a little different. Some shoot a little more accurately. Some shoot a little faster. But we all have our own thing. There's plenty of room for everyone, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Collecting my thoughts for a moment. So in the third year program, we've got about, after this last winter break, we got probably about 6 or 7 people, and everyone has their own kind of thing they like to do or that they like to specialize in. So you take their name, you write their specialization next to it, and you write their phone number, and you keep it tucked away for when the customer brings you something of that persuasion that you just don't want to touch. And then as far as like direct competition in the 1911, 2011 industry, I'm relatively new to it, but just looking around, there's, even though the big names are out there, it's still relatively scarce compared to all the gunsmithing that goes on. There's definitely room for it. Like I obviously people are a little, you know, on edge about direct competition and whatnot, but there's definitely room. There's no, there's not too many real reasons to be so afraid of it, especially when, like AJ said, we have lead times to deal with, we have backlogs to deal with. There's price differences between all of us. There's just so many options. You don't need to feel restricted in any of that.
So AJ, if you were the recruiter, sell me on your course. How much would I expect to make average as a gunsmith a year?
But you want me to tell you that, or you want me to sell you on the course? here's the reality, right? You are not going to make $100,000, getting out of this course your first year. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to walk out and be the next Wilson Combat or Nighthawk or any, you know, of these companies that took years to build and develop. I would expect if you got out and you went right to work for someone, you should have no problem pulling in starting $40,000 a year if you're good at what you do. And then the sky's the limit from where you want to go. It's first off, you have to love this. If you don't love this, you're not going to go anywhere with this. This is really not, to me, it's really not something someone does just because they're like, it's something to do. It's way too painstaking if you're good at it. It's way too painstaking and requires far too much of yourself that you're just like, I guess I'll play with this for a while. It's not like slapping ARs together in an hour. This is a labor of love that you have to have for doing it. When you get out, you know, and let's say you want to open up your own shop. Okay. You should probably not expect to be turning a profit for a couple of years. That's just the way it is. But once you do start building your reputation as a gunsmith, as a good gunsmith, I mean, the sky is the limit for you. There's so much, you know, I do a fair bit of prototyping for other companies, a fair bit of design work for other companies. And that's all within the realm of gunsmithing too. There's lots of avenues to explore from, you know, building custom one-ofs for companies to mass producing, you know, front sights or rear sights or whatever you want to do. It really all depends on you. It's everything you want to put into it. What do you want to do with it? If you're happy, you know, we have guys that just build wood stocks. They're more carpenters than gunsmiths, and they, you know, $10,000 for a piece of wood. For one piece of wood. So it's how do you want to approach it?
What do you think the biggest obstacle, or what are some of the bigger obstacles students face coming into the program? Some of your year one students.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest question you've asked. Number one is mechanical aptitude. We get a lot of guys that have zero experience in machine shops. That's okay. That's totally okay. But if you don't have the aptitude to understand how things work together and move together, you're going to struggle. You're absolutely going to struggle. If you aren't mechanically inclined, life's probably going to be rough, and you may or may not complete the course, because it does take a fair bit of figuring out how stuff works. And especially once you get out, there is only so much time we have in this course. We cannot teach you how to take apart every single gun and how every single gun out there works. But the principles that we teach you apply to basically almost every firearm out there. If you can understand that and apply that mechanical knowledge to the firearms you see that you haven't seen before, life will be fine. You can figure it out. It's not a big thing. So that's probably the number one issue we see. The other one is probably attention to details. You really have to have an attention to detail in order to really be good at this. You have to be able to focus on the minutiae of certain tasks. So if you can't, it's not going to work out for you. But if you can, it will take you a long, long way. But you have to have that discerning eye in order to be successful.
Jake, I want to kick it back over to you. What are some of your, I need you to brag on yourself a little bit, but why, what was it that got you accepted into the third year program?
So basically from day one, I walked in with boxes of parts for four 1911s. And as AJ said, that is, on a good week, you're getting done maybe one gun a week. And at the same time, we're still students. So even though we went through the build class, we still only had one gun under our belt. If that, some people didn't even be able to get finished by the end of it. By the end of week two, I had mine up in test firing. None of the aesthetic stuff was done, but it was up in test firing, and there were still mistakes in it, but with AJ's help, I found out where the mistakes were, and I did the next one even better. And then after that, by the end of the semester, I had four working guns ready to go, along with some other side projects just to assist with how grading in our fourth semester works, basically the deciding factor in how to get into our master's program. But from the get-go, I decided this is what I want to do. I want to learn every bit that I can. I want to perfect every bit that I can. And I just really want to build a great gun.
Nice. AJ, what are some of the things, the other side of that, what are some things that students who would like to be accepted into the third year program, what are some of the things, whether it's attitude or ability, that prevents them from being accepted into that third year program?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that's going to keep you from getting into the third year program is going to be that lack of attention to detail. Honestly, the other thing is going to really be a lack of drive. If you're just going through the motions and you want the answer to every question given to you without doing any research, without experimenting at all, it's not going to go well, and you're probably not going to be in the third year program. If you really don't want to specialize in anything, you're probably not going to be in the third year program. If your greatest love in life is sanding guns and Cerakoting them, the master's program probably isn't for you, because we're about the building of precision guns and fast guns. Those two things probably keep guys out of the third year program the most. The other thing too is, you know, I guess I'll touch just a little bit more on it, is that search for knowledge, that willingness to go outside to really delve into the information out there about gunsmithing that isn't provided in the course. The guys that are willing to do that and really learn, I have 16 hours to teach you how to build a gun that requires 40 to 80 hours of work. So I can't teach you everything. And don't forget, this gun's been around for over 100 years now. So people have tried one or two things with it. I just don't have the time to teach you everything about it. So the guys that are willing to go out there and look at some of the things, you know, look at sear geometry. What is sear geometry? Yeah, it's two angles for a 1911, but how does that actually work? Why is it important that, you know, the sear is a certain length and that the hammer is built a certain way? The guys that are going to research that and look into it, who have a real understanding of the mechanics of the guns, those guys are going to get into the third year program almost without a doubt. So also, I will say this, the guys that try and just get by with what they have and just, you know, there's a time and a place for just make it work. There absolutely is. But if you are trying to cut on, you know, a 4140 hardened slide with a piece of, you know, high speed cutter, it's not going to go well. But using the excuse, well, this is what I had and I didn't want to buy the proper tool, that's not going to fly, right? Not everything is just make it work. You have to do it the right way. So, yeah, that's about it.
Back to something when the podcast began. Sorry, I was late. I had a meeting at school that ran later than I thought it was. But when you guys were talking about tools, is there, like, for me, I'm the type of guy that, you know, if I get into something, I go all in. And in that same arena, when I go all in, I had kind of the mantra of, you know, buy nice, not twice. So are there different levels of tools that you can buy? And are there some that people should stay away from and some that people should kind of really go towards? Like, this is the only one you need in this brand kind of thing?
Oh, man, this is a great question, mostly because Jake and I were talking about this in class last week. there are certain tools that you need to buy absolutely the best quality you can. And then there are certain tools out there that you will be surprised how good they are when they are not the best quality. The best example I have, right? I use a lot of rotary tools, right? Working on 1911s, being a pistol smith in general, you're going to use a lot of rotary tools. That's what professionals call Dremels, right? So, except we run them on air, not electricity most of the time. So, my greatest rotary tools, my greatest, and I have about 12 of them lined up on my bench with different inserts in them, come from Harbor Freight, and they're about $11 each. And I tell you what, I have spent $120 on a rotary tool. I have spent $150 on rotary tools, and those rotary tools from Harbor Freight have been the best rotary tools I've ever bought, honestly. And when I destroy them and burn them out, I throw them away and I get another $14 or $11 rotary tool. I can't believe I'm saying that, but that's one of those tools where I was very surprised. How is this working so well? You know, right. It shouldn't.
Can't sleep on Harbor Freight.
That is the exact opposite answer I was expecting to get.
Yeah, but there are certain things. So I'll tell you, you know, cutters, right? So cutters are always a big thing. At least for pistol smiths, the mill, the mill makes our money for the most part. Mill and hand work is where we do most of our work. So good files. You cannot buy cheap files. You just can't. You're going to burn through files. Don't get me wrong. But there's only a few file companies out there with the proper cuts that you need to be working on guns. And they cost money. You know, it's not uncommon to spend $40 to $60 on a single file. That's just the way it is. And you're going to replace that file, you know, fairly regularly. Cutters are another thing. Certain cutters you can get away with buying. I'm not going to give away the name of the company because then everyone goes out and buys them and then I can't get them. But there are certain cutters on like Amazon that you can get away with making cuts with, and they work great, especially if you know you're going to torch that cutter cutting through like a nitrided slide or a DLC'd slide or something, trying to do a cut in it. There's things like that you can get away with. Then, of course, on the other end, you've got to buy a specialty. You know, one of the things we do as 1911, 2011 gunsmiths, every now and again, we'll have to turn a full-size gun into a commander-length gun. So take a 5-inch gun, turn it into a 4 1/4-inch gun. And in order to do that, that requires a very specialized cutter. It's about $140 to $200, depending on who you get it from. But it's the only cutter that'll do the job. So you got to be willing to spend that price on that cutter. So it goes both ways, honestly.
Yeah, one of our listeners just posted a comment that CJ Frost said, Dremel equals gunsmith. Okay, got it.
No.
I have a Dremel, and I took a little part out of the holster that I have. And so I now make holsters. I have a Dremel and YouTube. So I'm both a qualified gunsmith and a Tydex vendor. So. Yep. Yeah. If you guys have any jobs, feel free to DM me on the Instagram. It's a YouTube Gunsmither 07 is what
I
it is.
Him. He can do it.
Speaking of tools, not necessarily from the perspective of gunsmithing, but what would be a good toolkit that an end user should pick up if they're looking at just doing basic maintenance, maybe some basic repairs on your favorite plastic gun or 1911 and 1911, because I guess they'd be two different sets of things, right?
Yeah, the 1911 tools work on the Glock, so it's fine.
a little bit harder, it'll be okay.
That's right. Bigger hammer. So, you know, the big tools really you're going to need. Get a good set of punches, right? Typically, I steel punches, unless you need to not mar something, then throw some tape on there. a 4-ounce ball peen hammer does pretty much everything you will ever need to do, gunsmithing wise, or at least pistol wise, end user wise, you know, drifting in sights, drifting out sights. Speaking of that, a solid piece of hardwood, and I mean like solid piece of hardwood, is probably the best sight drifter you will ever come across, and it doesn't mar your sights. And I know that sounds like some guerrilla gunsmithing stuff, but I love the MGW sight pushers. I love them. They're great. But you can do the same thing with a piece of hardwood and a hammer. So I keep those around all the time. And really just, varying screwdrivers with or one screwdriver with variable tips. And you can do pretty much everything. Now, if you're a 1911 guy, you also, I'm going to tell you, just go out and buy the 10-8 Armorer's tool. Just do it. And because it's the greatest tool for the 1911 guys ever. But yeah. You know, with those basic tools, you can get pretty much everything done. Have some Torx bits around, have some Allen bits around, and it should be able to fit in a shaving kit size, and it'll do 90% of everything you need it to do.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if you got the people that are not watching the podcast, if you saw Jeremy's face as soon as he said 10-8 tool. He reached over and ordered it from Amazon.
Good man.
I don't even own a 1911 yet. But every now and then we have a guy show up to class that can't run it. It's always fun when they engage that safety and then they start doing malfunction clearance stuff. And it's like, hey, when was the last time you shot this? 4 years ago? Gotcha. Nice. Gunsmithing is something that is intrigued me, and I wish I had the patience or the dedication to really devote myself to it. But I don't. Every now and then I need to have some work done to my gun. What are some things that folks should look out for when they're looking for a gunsmith? And I guess are there certain specialized things that folks should consider maybe going outside of their locale to have done I know a lot of folks right now, red dots on pistols are the rage. Maybe one day I'll invest and do that. But, you know, the slide work, that kind of stuff. What are some things that folks should be looking for when they're finding a gunsmith?
Yeah, so that's a great question. My answer to this, and it comes up a lot, is always pedigree is going to be the first thing. You want to know where your gunsmith comes from. Did he graduate from Yavapai, you know, like Jake? Was he an apprentice under someone, or did he work for another company? You know, where does this guy come from? Or did he watch a bunch of YouTube videos and hang a shingle one day because he has a Dremel and he's a gunsmith, you know? And that is a real thing. That is a real thing out there. You know, I was lucky to where I had the opportunity to work with a master gunsmith. Unfortunately, not for as long as I wanted to, but it was, you know, one of those great experiences from where I could, you know, I had the schooling already, and then I worked with him and just learned so much more about specifically the 1911. You know, some people discredit the apprenticeship route, and they really shouldn't, because there are some amazing gunsmiths out there, some of the best the absolute best in the world, that they've never been to a school for gunsmithing. And I'm not saying that makes them, you know, bad gunsmiths. They are amazing gunsmiths because they went through under the tutelage of someone who really knew what they were doing. So that's another thing, you know, who did they apprentice under? Who did they work for at one point? You know, those are the questions you kind of want to find out. And then of course you want to see some sort of work that they've done. Typically now, don't get me wrong. If you're just taking it to your general gunsmith to, hey, can you swap my springs and give her a cleaning? Sure. Okay. You know, no big deal. But there are definitely things that you're going to want to send your gun to specialists for. Like you said, the red dot cuts. Lots of people are doing red dot cuts now. Not all red dot cuts are the same. There are some guys out there doing them very correctly. There are some guys out there that are just making it work. The worst I ever saw was a guy that literally was doing his red dot cuts with a Dremel. The whole thing with a Dremel. Yep. Real story. Yep. 100%.
Oh my God.
Yep. And he was charging people money for it, and they were paying him for it. And it was sad. So these things happen. But yeah, you know, you want to find out, you know, there's a handful of companies out there now doing fantastic red dot cuts. Companies like CNH Precision, Primary Machine. You know, if you're going to do the Chambers Custom Plate, I would say send it to me because we do that one pretty exclusively. L&M Precision does great work. So those are, you know, there's a handful of guys out there doing great red dot cuts. If it's something very gun specific, you know, trigger jobs, right? Yes, every real gunsmith should know how to do a trigger job. But if you're a 1911 aficionado, you're going to want to send it to a specialist to have that trigger job done because they know that system inside and out. And let me tell you, you can make a 1911 go very wrong very quickly if you don't know what you're doing. I see it every day with students struggling to understand sear geometry and spring ratios and pressures. So that would be something I would say. If you're going to have anything ignition system wise done, send it to a specialist. You know, if you're in the CZ family of guns, companies like CZ Custom Shop do amazing work on their trigger systems. Cajun Gunworks, amazing work on their ignition systems. There's a fair bit. And again, with all these guys, you want to see something, you know, some review or someone who's seen their guns or someone who has shot their guns before, to formulate an opinion on whether or not it's worth it to send them or not. You know, just because something looks good on Instagram doesn't necessarily mean you want to send your gun to them. Unless it's me, then go ahead and send it to me and I'll take care of it.
So I have a question to segue off of what you're talking about. How would you tell somebody, let's say that you got a competition shooter that wants to get some work done to their gun and they need to send to a specialist. They don't really know anyone. They don't know, you know, they're new to the area or whatever. Let's say they don't have internet access. How would you recommend, I'm just kidding about that. I'm talking about them being able to search. How would you tell somebody how to search for a good qualified gunsmith to work on their X gun? I mean, what's the avenue that we take? I mean, as instructors, we go and talk to students and other instructors and industry leaders and all that stuff. Is there anything different in the gunsmithing world? I mean, how would you recommend somebody actually find a quality specialist?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's pretty much the same, right? Just like on the teaching side of the world, everyone knows everyone else in some way, shape, or form, right? There is a 6 degrees of separation is probably pretty much closer to like 3 degrees of separation. And it's the same in the gunsmithing world. Absolutely. So you can't, you know, you can't go two people in without somebody knowing someone or, you know, knowing of someone doing specialty work, especially like your example, a competition shooter, right? I guarantee you all he has to do is find another competition shooter that, especially a higher level competition shooter that has a similar gun to you, and he'll know exactly what specialists to talk to and who to find. As far as searching them out, it's hard. Again, it's the best thing is always, honestly, direct customer review. Knowing someone that has had work done by them is always going to be the best, because advertising is lying a lot of the times, unfortunately. And you can do the coolest, most amazing cuts in the world, but if you don't understand how those cuts affect timing of your gun, they don't do so well. So, yeah, it's a hard one.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes along with anything. We had a couple listener questions. One was how to find a there it is. Is there an easy way to identify a gunsmith to avoid? And I think it's kind of probably along the same line. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's kind of like a tattoo artist, right? You've got to go and talk to the guy. You've got to see what he does. You got to look at his book and actually look at his tattoos he's done. Go on YouTube, go on Google or wherever you can find this person to be able to look at their reviews and just kind of establish your own opinion. And then as a finally, of it is just got to take a chance, right? Would you say there's anything else that you could do to avoid other than going and talking to the guy and he's just a total jerk? Is there anything else you can think of?
No, I mean, that's about it. You know, there's not much different in this industry than anything else.
So I wanted to ask one quick, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you ask another gunsmith and they're like, yeah, well, this other gunsmith, that's a good way to, hey, avoid that one you just asked me about.
Yeah.
So I wanted to follow up on that a little bit. What would you tell somebody that is looking for a gunsmith that for some specific thing, let me circle back around that. My thoughts are kind of jumbled right now. I had a question and I was listening to you guys and it came off. So Andy, I'll flip back over to you for now. If I can think of it, I'll come back.
Okay. So CJ asked another question is, does Yavapai allow students to take separate classes one at a time, or is it a total program like 1911, 2011? Is there a Glock Armors course that I can only go in and take if I want to learn about Glocks, or do you have to take the complete course as one set?
No, you have to take the whole thing. It's all or nothing for sure, because we are building gunsmiths, not armors, right? And really, you need all of it in order to, you really need to be a generalist before you can ever be a specialist, because there are things you're going to learn about the other systems that directly apply. I mean, I'm sure Jake can tell you all the stuff he learned in rifle class and how it applied to, you know, building pistols, especially like on the revolver end, and how everything is linked. So the way the program's set up, you have to do everything. You don't have to like everything, but that's how it goes.
So that kind of follow, how would you explain to somebody what the difference is between an armorer and a gunsmith? If you guys haven't already gone over that, if you have, just skip it and I'll turn it back over to somebody else.
No, that's a great question. Right. So I get a lot of hate for this answer, but I still stand by it. If you don't know how to run a mill and you don't know how to run a lathe, you are not a gunsmith. Okay. Because a gunsmith has to be able to, at times, build his own parts out of necessity or modify things out of necessity or in order to fix them. So armors swap parts, factory parts for factory parts or factory cut parts for factory cut parts. Gunsmiths don't, you know, it's not uncommon for us to weld things up and chop things off and, you know, build something that doesn't exist, build a sight, a special sight or a, you know, a special grip or something that just doesn't exist. So that's really the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll relate the known to the unknown. It's kind of like when, one of my friends way back, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, he lives down in Phoenix. We were talking about cars and, you know, engines and motors, and he builds these like, you know, $75,000, you know, drag racing cars. And I was talking about something with my Jeep or my Suburban or something. I can't remember what it was. And he was like, don't take it to the dealership. And I was like, wait, what? You know, I kind of thought that's where you took your cars to get fixed, unless you need an oil change or something. And he's like, no. Dealerships replace parts, mechanics fix cars. So that really makes sense to me now.
That's a great way to look at it. 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, hey, I gotta write that. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. So Jake, just I always ask the FUI questions. I got two questions, one for each of you. Jake, what do you do out there in Prescott? Now, I lived in Phoenix for 15 years, and we were talking about this pre-show, I guess I call it. I used to go up there to Whiskey Row and get in a lot of trouble because there's all kinds of bars on there. And there's the nice little lake out there, Lynx Lake, that I used to just every weekend I'd go up there and just go lay out there and drink beer and fish. So what do you do other than gunsmithing out there in Prescott?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Honestly, I like to do a little bit of everything that sometimes is outdoors, but usually isn't. Like when I get weekends, time to myself, when I'm not at school for, I don't know, 12 hours a day, sometimes I like to cook. Every now and then I like to explore. I don't really do the bar hopping a whole lot anymore. Definitely enjoy playing video games, just kind of getting to zone out for a little bit and just, you know, the usual stuff like Call of Duty and whatnot. The weekends I kind of get a little bit lost too, because I also like to dabble in like the stock market and stuff like that. So that all shuts down over the weekend. That just kind of fizzles me out a little bit. But me and some friends, every now and then we go out, look around, find something new. Even though we've lived here for 2.5-3 years now, we always kind of find something new because all of us are about the same and don't get out enough and stuff like that.
Yeah, did you get in on quick, the GameStop?
I was just going to ask, how many millions of dollars did you make on GameStop?
Unfortunately, none, because I saw every red flag that was there, and I ignored the one person that said, hey, you might want to look into this, and I was like, that just looks kind of dangerous, and then I wake up, and it's 5 times, and yeah, it's lessons learned, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, hindsight's always 20/20, right?
Oh,
only if we could just get into that one good stock. I've been playing with Robinhood myself a little bit, and I'm talking a little bit, like little money. But
you know what they say, fortune favors the bold.
This is true.
And that's exactly how I play it, which is why I'm still at just about the same amount that I started with last year. You get some really good ones, and then you get some not so good ones. And
yeah, I'm barely playing with it at most, and it's, I mean, I have a pinky toe in the water. That's about it right now. And I don't know how far I'll go, but anyway, we'll see. And AJ, I got to ask you. So the first time I met you was in a Tim Herron course out there in Prescott. We had a nice cigar and some wonderful, wonderful bourbon. I got to know, have you heard or seen any more murder cats down from your house?
Because I knew you were going to ask that.
I'm afraid of the dark now because of that night. Just saying.
I don't blame you. I mean, the devil appeared in Prescott. It was terrifying. No, I have not seen any. I take that back. I did see one run across that road I was telling you about over that hill about, I don't know, 3 months ago or so. But that was it. And I haven't heard anything since. So hopefully.
Thank God.
Hopefully nothing happens.
I mean, I kind of reached out to you to come on the show, but really I just wanted to see if you guys were still alive. So AJ has a beautiful house on the side of a mountain that you sit out on his beautiful deck. We were out there, Tim Herron, myself, and AJ, and all of a sudden we heard these blood-curdling screams that literally ran right up your spine, right, AJ? Like, it just... That thing scared the hell out of me. And it took us probably 30 minutes for me to realize I've heard that before. I'm like, that's a mountain lion. And even AJ living there, and he's like, are you sure, dude? Because I think that's the devil. And you know, all of us sitting out on the porch, no guns on us, you know, all the gun guys with no guns, nothing but each other to keep each other warm in fear. That's about it. Man, I will never forget that night, dude, honestly, of the fear that I had about that damn mountain lion squealing. And if you ever want to hear one, go on YouTube and listen, and you'll get it. That kind of.
It is terrifying.
Like, it is straight
exorcist terrifying. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Absolutely.
If Tim was there, I wouldn't have had to worry about him. I feel like he's pretty quick on his feet.
Listen, had to outrun the two of us, and I was concerned.
Yeah. Me and AJ were trying to see who was going to outrun each other because we knew Tim would be gone.
And he tied Tim's shoelaces together.
I mean, we may have switched chairs, and I strategically placed myself closer to the door. So
this is true.
Stuff happens.
Awesome. CJ said, I just spend my ammo money on stock since I can't hardly find any ammo. That's a great decision right now. I get excited when I see 9mm ammo at 50 cents a round. And then I think to myself, oh, stop it. That's a case of ammo is a class, right? I got a couple cases of ammo. I know where Judson keeps all of his. So awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys jumping on with us and everybody staying tuned and watching us this evening. Before we wrap up, anybody have any parting thoughts? AJ, Jake, it was awesome having you guys on the show. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Jake, go ahead.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Wish I would have had the camera so everyone could see, you know, my messy room, but that's not important. No, I had a really good time. To everyone who's thinking about going into gunsmithing, it's a lifestyle, you know. If you want to be a part of it, you have to be a part of it. Don't go in, and anyone can say, I'm going to do this as a hobby, but it's never a hobby. It's all of it or it's none of it kind of thing, at least from what I've seen and what I've felt. But, there's starting to be a resurgence, so there's always a need for more good gunsmiths. If you think you can do it, try it.
Yeah, and again, thank you guys for having us. Really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. The biggest thing I would tell everyone is, listen, if you can, and if they're good, support your local gunsmith 100%. And support, if you're a specialty guy, support your specialty gunsmiths, because it is a dying trade, and we need it probably now more than ever. there's a lot of things you can just kind of throw away in the world today. It'd be nice to see some pride of ownership coming back and have those professional tradesmen work on your guns and fix your guns and keep them running. So that's all I would say. Thank you guys again for having us. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. Definitely looking forward to hopefully having you on again to discuss one of your pistol courses or your rifle course. Jake, yeah, I'd love to have you back on when you start hang your shingle out there and start making some custom 1911s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, I'd for everybody else. Back. Awesome. We're here. We weren't here in 2020 because we all had COVID for the entire year. That's what I'm blaming it on. But season two of After Action Project is back. We will be back sometime next week for your folks listening and viewing pleasure. Remember, it's your life. It's your safety and protection. It's your responsibility. Stay safe.
Man, we really hope you enjoy listening to that episode as much as we did interviewing and having our guests on. Be sure to share this with your friends and family and head over to patreon.com/afteractionproject. We'd love to have you on as a guest panelist, and be sure to check out those other rewards that we have for our Patreons.
If you're a recent graduate of a firearms-related training course and would like to join us on our show, or if you'd like us to review a specific firearm-related training course or instructor, shoot an email to show@afteractionproject.com. Remember to join a local firearms advocacy organization. As always, stay safe, shoot straight, and remember to secure your firearms so that unauthorized persons cannot gain access to them.